Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Good morning to you. It is Thursday, January 30th. I don't even know how we got here. January is always such a blur because it's filled with football and compelling storylines. And when there are no games, well, then there's news. And we still had plenty of that. And oh, goodness, the NBA actually resurfaced with some stories on Wednesday as well. I will admit, since about 9 o'clock Eastern time last night, 6 o'clock Pacific, I have been paying far more attention to what's happening in D.C. near Reagan Airport on the shores of the Potomac River, the bank of the Potomac River. If you haven't heard, if you're just waking up, there was a horrific crash, a mid-air collision between a regional jet and a Black Hawk helicopter. And I've seen some of the various interviews with pilots that fly in and out of there or just people that work in that area. And it's common that you have military vehicles there. The Pentagon is not that far away. There's also a joint base that's located pretty close to the bank of the Potomac as well. And so whatever happened, there's air traffic control audio, there's video because there's so many different cameras there. At night, there's a bazillion lights, and anybody who lives near a big city who's ever maybe landed in a plane at night or taken off, anything like that, you see it from the air, the lights can blind you. And certainly these guys are trained professionals, the pilots, and they're used to that type of thing, but I can understand how potentially some lights of other aircraft could get lost. They're still trying to figure out what happened. Only now we know that the regional jet was on approach to Reagan and was 400 feet up. That's it. And was just a few seconds from landing as it was crossing the river or getting across the river. And it got hit from behind by this helicopter. And at this point, we're still watching rescue teams in the water. There are these photos of the plane that's in two pieces that's submerged, mostly submerged in 7 feet of water. The helicopter was upside down. About a half hour ago, what we heard from law enforcement is that they had recovered 19 bodies, but there were 64 people on the plane and 3 soldiers in the helicopter. The water is about 35 degrees. They haven't found any survivors yet, but they are still looking at this as a rescue operation, as improbable, unlikely as it might be. I've been praying for a miracle. And then about an hour and a half ago, we found out from U.S. figure skating that there is a contingent of team members, young figure skaters and coaches, and probably their families too, who were in Wichita. That's where this flight originated. They were in Wichita and they were flying to DC. And at this point, I've seen upwards of 12, 14 potentially members of that figure skating team that could have been on this flight, though that number is not confirmed. We do know that part is real, though, because there are other U.S. figure skaters, part of that youth contingent, who are still in Wichita, who have confirmed that right after they got done with this elite development camp, in the wake of the U.S. Figure Skating Championships, they held a camp for high-level skaters, youth skaters, and right after that, a bunch of them boarded this flight. And that's coming from one of the U.S. figure skaters himself. So we're waiting to see. I'm waiting to see if they're able to find any survivors. But there have been hundreds of first responders and divers and law enforcement and rescue teams on the shore as well as in the water. Those videos are live and there's photos out there too. And just hoping that we are going to get some good news. But 67 people right now between those two aircraft, 67 people that they believe were on board. And then again, this happened about 9 o'clock Eastern time last night. So it's hard to talk about sports or even care about sports right now. I know that many of you can watch the news if that's what you want to do. And I've been doing the same thing here in the studio, trying not to watch or to listen to the audio, just watching the reports that are coming across the screen. But this is all that I've been caring about really for the past 7-8 hours. And I know, again, many of you are in the same boat, or you're waking up and you're finding out now. It'll be the biggest story, of course. Oh, I should mention too, it's not just U.S. figure skating, but Russia, the Russian news media and the Kremlin have confirmed that a pair of former world champions, so Russian world champions who became coaches in the United States, they've lost those two figure skaters as well as their son, who was 23. So Russia has confirmed, their government and their news media has confirmed, that they lost three people, including a pair of world champions going back to the mid-90s, but they'd been here in the United States for 15 years as coaches. So there is that confirmation. They put their names out there and their photos as well. So that's been confirmed by Russia. So hard to think about the families, especially when you're talking about young people. And I've seen some of their photos. They're just little kids. They're junior high kids, maybe. So this families have been affected forever. Such a tragic way, and so quickly, too. We are expecting at 7:30 this morning, Eastern time, the mayor of the District of Columbia of D.C. will give an update on the plane crash, but there have been official updates throughout the night, going back to when the investigation was launched, and just to try to give an update on the rescue operations. We've seen some stretchers. We've seen some of the what they call the mobile morgue, the staging area where they're taking care of the victims as they're pulling them out of the water. And it's a huge operation still there next to the river in Arlington, Virginia. So we're watching that after the hour of 5 o'clock in the morning. I can't even imagine, Pete, what the photos will look like in the daytime, whether we're talking gray hours of dawn, talking about certainly when the sun comes up and people can really see what's happening there on the water. Right now, it's a lot of lights, though. As I say, there are some photos that have been taken by helicopters that are flying by. And so they have released some photos, but in the light of day, it just looks so different.
Oh, it'll be heartbreaking. And it's heartbreaking now. And just thinking about also when that bridge collapsed.
Baltimore.
In Baltimore. And how you would see it was overnight as well, or mm-hmm. In early morning, and you would see the bridge collapse, and then you didn't really know you didn't see the real visual of
the
it
extent,
until the morning, and then you saw it, and you were just devastated by all of it. It's just horrible.
It is. It's gut wrenching, and I've been feeling sick over it, just waiting for some indication. They're still calling it a rescue operation, which gives me some hope. But the water's really cold, obviously, and there are parts of the Potomac that are covered in ice, too, which will indicate, you know, how quickly that hypothermia, that freezing can set in. So I don't really have many more details beyond that, but obviously a devastating turn of events last night. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. We'll provide some updates as we have them, if we get them, before we get off the air. You can find me online at A-Law Radio. I've been sharing some of the details as I'm coming across them. And then on our Facebook page as well. Just want to say as a side note how grateful I am that you all were engaged, that you were interested in the conversation with Clint Hurdle, the former MLB Manager of the Year. And I bring that up now, not only because I've gotten a lot of responses and reaction to it, but because his was real life wisdom in the face of failure, in the face of tragedy in his own life, and the wisdom that he offers. I mean, he equates it to baseball, right? But it very often applies to some of the other challenges we face as human beings, whether it's tragedy, whether it's loss, whether it's grief, whether it is failure, whatever it happens to be. And I'm grateful for having spoken to him earlier this week, because that perspective is so needed and so necessary when things are hard and things are painful and we don't understand things. So I appreciate that many of you heard that conversation. If you missed it, it is on both of our social media sites. And our phone number, 855-212-4227. That's 855-212-4227. There's basketball taking place last night at the Chase Center. And in the middle of the broadcast, I was listening to Tim Roy on Warriors Radio. He did drop in a note about the WNBA team that will be starting play at the Chase Center come this spring. Obviously, every NBA team now, a lot of these radio outlets, they are making sure they incorporate the WNBA because of the popularity, the surging popularity around Caitlin Clark, Angel Reese, their debut in the league last year. And it's incredible the way that not only has the league, the WNBA, expanded the schedule, expanded the playoffs, they've got big plans. How about the fact that Indiana, the Indiana Fever, are pouring billions of dollars into a brand new training facility, which will be state of the art and feature childcare and offices and all of the different facilities that they could possibly need. And a lot of that is coming from the windfall, the revenue that they made this year in fans who are clamoring to see Caitlin Clark. And I wanted to pass this along because my mom is a big Caitlin Clark fan. She's not alone. There are a lot of people who have decided they don't want to miss any of Caitlin's games, whether on TV or streaming on the internet. Her husband's wanted to take her to a game. So PE sent me this text a couple of nights ago. WNBA, Dallas Wings versus the LA Sparks. So this is in Dallas, right? He's looking at tickets in Dallas because that's closest to them in Houston. Tickets 8 rows behind the visitor bench. So if you were going to go to Dallas to see the Fever, you'd want to sit behind the visitor's bench. So he's just investigating. Against the LA Sparks, you can sit 8 rows behind the visitor's bench for $169 each. That's in Dallas. Okay. All right. Fever game in Dallas. Same seats. Tickets 8 rows behind the Fever bench. Are you ready for this?
Let me guess.
Okay.
$700.
$1,224 a pop.
She's making the money.
Holy cow.
Yep.
It's not just in Indiana. It's not just at everywhere. Gainbridge Fieldhouse, which, by the way, is hosting the WNBA All-Star festivities in July, and they're going to make a mint off of that. It's road games. It's how many times do we see WNBA teams move to larger arenas last year so they could accommodate the influx of fans who want to buy tickets? But this is still in Dallas. Her second year, right? You would expect if the novelty was going to die down, well then, or it, you know, kind of die out a little bit, that it would have by now. Oh no. And in fact, because she didn't, she's not playing in this kind of startup. It's a 3-on-3 league. Unrivaled is the name of it. It was started by Breanna Stewart and Afisha Collier, two incredible WNBA players. She's not playing in that. She's also declined to compete in the NBA All-Star competition as like this 3-point challenge. So she may be there in San Francisco, but she's not going to compete at the NBA All-Star festivities, which come up in I guess it's 2 weeks from this weekend. Instead, she's going to wait until they get to the WNBA All-Star Weekend at her own arena, but $1,224 a pop to sit behind the Fever bench in Dallas. Compare that with a game against the Sparks, an LA team that you would think would have a following, $169. The bargain basement price.
And all those people that say, oh, why are we talking about Caitlin Clark and whatnot? She's adding zeros onto ticket prices.
Right.
At the end of the ticket prices.
Yeah,
she is a remarkable drawing card for the WNBA, and it's propelled them to a next level that they haven't seen.
Yeah, that and the fact that even like going into year number two, it's even more of a demand, and it's escalating. There are a limited number of games that you can see her, whether home or road. all the furor over her not being in the Olympics and all of that jazz. It's a little bit of supply and demand there too, because there's only so many games. Though again, the WNBA has added games, but the tickets are selling out. People can't get access to them in Indiana, so they're trying to find other ways. Now, I wrote back to him and I said, how about a little farther up in the arena? Because I would like to have my mom go to a game. I mean, this is the most interest she's shown in anything to do with sports in years, probably since I was playing. Well, that's not true. Since I grew up in New Hampshire, she followed the Celtics for a lot of years. And I think going back to, let's see, Rondo. She liked Rondo. That was a long time ago. Well, when they won their run, so Paul Pierce and Kevin Garnett and Ray Allen and Rondo, she followed that team and really enjoyed it. And when the Warriors were getting to their five straight NBA finals and Steph Curry and Klay Thompson, the Splash Brothers, she really enjoyed those. She loves basketball. She really enjoyed those teams and those runs as well. I know she was a big fan of Steph and Klay, who wasn't. But it's been a while. And I've said this before, she couldn't have named one WNBA player. She couldn't have named one college basketball player in the women's game other than me before last year. And then about midway through the season, caught an Iowa game on TV, and that was all she wrote. My mom does not miss. She's got a jersey. She's got a little mascot stuffed animal. She has the WNBA league pass to watch games on tape when she can't catch them live.
And like, you know
my mom's a diehard now.
You know what this does too to the league? It makes everyone else better.
That's
everyone
true.
Else will want to get that next player that's out
right.
there. So they'll improve their scouting. They'll go. They'll find extra ways to learn about other players. They'll try to up their free agency. Up
yep.
what they want to do in free agency.
Yep.
They'll try to stack their team so that they could compete against someone like a Caitlin Clark. This makes everybody else want to be better and makes the whole league better.
And I wonder if the NBA will also up its PR and maybe do more of these kind of joint events. And it's notable that the WNBA's never made money on its own. Maybe last year was the aberration. I haven't seen the money or the final revenue. Certainly the new TV package is going to be a big deal, but the NBA has been supplementing the WNBA for 30 years. This could change all of that. And can you imagine if the WNBA would be financially viable on its own? Now they're adding teams, they're expanding the season. They're certainly going to add events. And yeah, it's really neat that Caitlin has declined to compete in any 3-point challenge until it's at her own arena for WNBA All-Star Weekend in mid-July. What a scene. That's going to be, it's incredible. And so we'll see how it may continue this year. But all the reports indicate she has been working her arse off in the gym to get stronger, to get better, to withstand the rigors of a physical league. Of course, they came at her last year. We know that. But to be able to play her best all the way through. And on her birthday, she just turned 23 earlier this month. On her birthday, there were videos put out there by the Fever coaching staff. 50 of 54 threes. All in a row. We're not talking about taking a break and here's 10 more. No. 50 of 54 threes she hit from all the way around the arc. I mean, she's a machine.
That's
when
something.
She gets locked in.
Oh,
yeah.
My goodness.
Right. 855-212-4227 at A Law Radio and also on our Facebook page. Thank you so much for joining us on this Thursday morning. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
Guarded by Anderson on a switch, 10 to shoot. Shea steps back, fires 20-foot jumper straightaways. Money. Gildas Alexander's got 45, and OKC's down three, 98-95.
Curry off a screen by Schroeder, takes a deep three.
Good!
Doubles the Warrior advantage just like that. Curry's got 21. Looney sets the screen, Curry comes left. Crossover dribble again. Down the right side, gets it to Wiggins. He's open, who fires? And he hits it right in front of the Warrior bench! Three ball, right corner pocket for Wiggins. Warriors up seven.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
The voices of Matt Pinto on Thunder Radio and then Tim Roy on Warriors Radio. This is a game in which the Thunder had a pretty sizable lead, a double-figure lead. Earlier in the game, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander came out like a house on fire. He was terrific. And ended up with another 50-plus points. So too shy of his career high, which he set last week. I believe I have this right. He's the first player ever to have a pair of... No, never mind. I think it was that he's the first one ever to have a pair of 50-point games, career highs, within a span of four games. But I could be wrong now that I'm saying it out loud. I could be wrong. I can neither confirm nor deny. But he did. I know this for sure. He had another 52 points and just too shy of the record he set, personal record he set going back to last week. This portion of the show is sponsored by Hyundai. Hyundai. I do it wrong every time. But in my defense, producer Pete, I feel like in the past it was Hyundai. Don't you feel like you've heard that at some point?
My father said it that way.
Okay, see, that's probably, well, that's not where I heard it. Let's try it again. This portion of the show is sponsored by Hyundai. Hyundai helps protect you and your family on the road. We put your safety first and everything else second. It's After Hours on on the Infinity Sports Network. The Warriors are in desperate need of big wins like this and trying to find some type of a way to capture momentum. Remember, they started out the season, I think it was 17-3 they were at some point, and now they're barely above 500. But this is a big win for them because now they do match up well with the Oklahoma City Thunder, but OKC is the best of the West. And so to rally from double figures down, to be able to withstand what was a 52-point performance by Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, Andrew Wiggins with a huge game, and he had 10 points down the stretch. He was 4-for-4 from the field. They had to figure out a way to counter Gilgeous-Alexander.
He's tough. He's cold. He's tough. You know, he can score all three levels. You know, he gets to the foul line, and, you know, he doesn't stop. You know, the whole game, he's at you, you know, just... It's tough, you know, just stopping him is not stopping him. Just trying to contain him is a team effort. It's a big win for us. You know, just, you know, they're the best team in the West, you know, so just knowing what we're capable of when we play together, we play the right way and lock in. Hopefully this is a momentum swing for us and, you know, just keep piling on.
We've struggled to play with that bounce and that confidence here the last month or so. So it's great to see us fight through that and then kind of reach that state in the second half where, like, you could see the belief, you could see the energy, and felt like we captured that again. And now we got to sustain it, obviously.
A game is re-airing on TV here in my studio. Steph Curry had some big threes. I hear one of the deep threes late in the game, about 2 minutes to go, just under 2 minutes to go. He nailed a huge one. And he was just coming back from a knee injury. And so for him to miss their last game, they did beat Utah. Now they've got this victory. I think it's 3 of 4 now, and we'll see. They still don't have Draymond Green. He's getting closer to coming back from injury, but that changes their entire defense. And he's also a great passer and very often is looking for Steph, and the two of them have played together so long that they have a real strong connection. I mentioned this earlier. I consider them one of the old married couples in sports because they've been teammates for so long that they can really use that nonverbal communication, or they can finish each other's sentences. And I bet each of them would say Hyundai correctly. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Adam Silver did an extensive interview on the Dan Patrick Show on Wednesday, and he was responding to this idea that the NBA is tanked when it comes to TV viewership, that people are not watching on TV anymore. And he agrees with the fact that they've got a problem here, which is why he points to their new media rights deal, which includes the streaming element. This migration to streaming continues.
At this moment, we can redefine how we present the game to fans and also make it a lot more convenient. I mean, in our new deals, every game will be streamed. And we have a very young audience. You know, they're watching more screen time than ever before, but not traditional television.
He also goes on and on about how the younger audience, and this is the coveted segment of the audience, which is about 18 to 34, 35. You want to try to get them as fans young so that presumably they can spend a lifetime supporting the league and consuming games and spending money on the league and that type of thing. But that's the group of young people who aren't watching TV nearly as much. And I know my nieces are not huge NBA fans, but they are young consumers right smack dab in the middle of that age range. And they watch far more YouTube, TikTok, that type of thing than they do TV. They'll stream. So they go on Netflix and just stream a series. They don't even watch what is live TV. Instead, they go ahead and stream series that they want that, you know, that maybe weren't even ever produced on TV. But if they were, now they're packaged and you can binge watch them. I remember when my niece was in college, my younger niece, they didn't even have TV. They just had a computer that they would stream stuff on that everybody would watch. And so it's a very different audience, which means you have to target that audience completely differently. And so as much as people are complaining about TV ratings, Adam Silver says it's not quite as bad as what people make it out to be.
The narrative early in the season became the ratings are down because of three-point shooting. I think those are two independent issues. The ratings are now about even with last year. And as I said, you know, if you look more broadly at other measures of engagement, our attendance last season was the highest in the history of the league. I mean, you can't look at social media over too long a spectrum because it didn't exist. But if you, but when you add in social media, the game has never been more popular in terms of the engagement.
And he's got a couple of interesting ideas. One of them being shortening the games. Now, just for comparison purposes, the NFL is committed to having its games be roughly 3 hours. That's something that, while they don't talk a lot about, Roger Goodell, their media partners, when it comes to advertisers, they absolutely want the NFL, the package, to be 3 hours. So they stick to that, even when you're talking about games where they can sell more ad content. By the way, a 30-second Super Bowl ad, $8 million. Most ever. And what I've heard about Super Bowl commercials this year is that because they're so expensive, they're getting priced out. So you can only have some of the biggest companies that can afford this, but they also are using more and more celebrities. Haven't we seen an increase of that the last few years with Super Bowl ads, more and more celebrities? So I have heard to expect more and more celebrities and humor. That appears to be the theme, celebrities and humor.
I believe there's one with Billy Crystal and Meg Ryan.
Yes, recreating their scene from When Harry Met Sally.
Yep.
Which you have to be of a certain age, but if you haven't seen it, it'll be all over the place. It'd certainly be packaged on TikTok for people to be able to watch that one particular scene. But that movie itself was iconic if you were a particular age. Anyway, back to the NBA and its packaging. So NFL wants to stick to three-hour games. College football, to me, this is where college football loses a little pizzazz and a little attractiveness next to the NFL because their games are so bleeping long. Like, the national championship game, I don't know if this has to do with ratings being down. I'm not sure. But I think it's more about the Monday and the fact that people are football fatigued after coming off of an NFL playoff weekend and just so late in the year and 10 days after the semifinals. So there's a lot of issues there to fix. But that game went on for what felt like 4+ hours. And the commercial breaks are so long. And I get that that's how they sell their advertising and they make their money, but there's got to be a happy medium. So something else too is Major League Baseball. How much Rob Manfred, the great lengths, some of them gimmicky lengths that he's gone to speed up the game, the pace of play, but it's been really well received.
Yeah, it has by fans of by the new fan, the fan that wants to learn more about baseball, not by the old school fan, but they don't want that fan. They want the new person. They want, like you said, they want the person that's just growing up into sports that will stay with the sport for a long time.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I will still watch it regardless of how gimmicky it gets. But but people that are younger want to see the gimmicks. That's it.
Even the NBA itself has tried some gimmicks. This in-season tournament.
That's ridiculous.
If you have to explain it to people and change the courts, it means that it's not sticking.
That's not for the fans. That's to motivate players, which is ridiculous.
You think?
Yes.
Even dumber.
Oh, it's totally dumb. It's to motivate players to the regular season's so boring. I mean, they have so many days off now. There's so many rest periods. And now Adam Silver, as we'll hear in this cut, wants to cut down the quarters.
Right. So coming back to basketball, not only do they have the in-season tournament, they've got this playoff 7-10, called the 7-10 split. This playoff play-in tournament, which also annoys me so much. It's just to increase more playoff teams, theoretically, and get more games on TV.
Everyone makes the playoffs.
Yeah, right. Seriously, 2/3 of the league makes the playoffs. So now Silver is floating this idea, again, this is on the Dan Patrick Show Wednesday, of actually making the game shorter.
As we get more involved in global basketball, the NBA is the only league that plays 48 minutes. And I am a fan of 4 10-minute quarters. I'm not sure that many others are. I mean, putting aside what it means for records and things like that, you know, I think that a 2-hour format for a game is more consistent with sort of modern television habits.
In other words, bite-sized. Feed into this idea that people can't possibly concentrate on a game that's more than 2 hours.
Well, let's not stop there. Let's do 10 4-minute quarters. You talk about bite size. There's your bite size.
Well, and the thing is, people don't have any issues watching a 3-hour NFL game. So if your product was something that people were desperate to consume, then you would have no issue with a 3-hour game. Not that the NBA is playing 3-hour games, but it is 2.5.
Well, I think the game has turned into a 3-point shooting contest over the game that it was in the 90s and maybe the early 2000s, where it was a little more on finesse and driving in the paint and
well, it used to be a contact sport,
right? Defense.
Yeah, yeah,
right.
I will agree. I don't enjoy the NBA product. I can't stand the ISO ball taking 75 3-pointers in a game. To me, that is nearly unwatchable. And I watch it when I have to, but I do not enjoy it as much. So anyway, he's thinking of shortening quarters, and we'll see whether or not that has the desired effect. But certainly the streaming, that's something they're key on. By the way, just got this tweet from Stan. When the Hyundai was first being sold in the U.S., they had an ad campaign that said something like, Hyundai rhymes with Sunday. That helps me remember the pronunciation. Okay, I can do that. From now on, this portion of the show, when it's sponsored by Hyundai, it rhymes with Sunday.
There you go.
It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Here's our latest sports update, and here's Peter Schwartz.
Sean Gilgeous-Alexander.
Did not just do
Infinity
that.
Sports Network.
Poor guy.
Sports Flash.
Begin with the NBA. We'll start in San Francisco. Andrew Wiggins, 27 points. Warriors over the Thunder, 116-109. T-Wolves top the Suns, 121-113. Anthony Edwards, 33 points. Kyrie Irving with 25. Mavericks get by the Pelicans, 137-136. Now to Philadelphia.
Maxey driving, top of the key area, 5 to shoot. He's still got it between the rings, between the legs, driving to the lane, down the lane, up and good. Maxey, too good. Put him on the All-Star team.
Tom McGinnis on Sixers Radio. The Sixers over the Kings, 117-104. Tyrese Maxey had 30 points. Now to Charlotte.
Under 2 minutes to go now. 19-point net lead. They've led by as much as 24. They've never trailed. Johnson taking it down the lane to the rim, and he scores a hard driving layup by Keon Johnson. He's got 18 points. That's most points they've scored since that win in Portland on January 14th.
That was Chris Carino on Nets Radio. Nets over the Hornets, 104-83. Keon Johnson had 18 points. Elsewhere, the Clippers over the Spurs, 128-116. Knicks win their 5th in a row, beat the Nuggets, 122-112. Jalen Brunson had 30 points, 15 assists. Cavs over the Heat, 126-106. Celtics, 122. Bulls, 100. Pacers beat the Pistons, 133-119. The Raptors over the Wizards, 106-82. Indiana Fever star Caitlin Clark will not participate in a special three-point challenge during NBA All-Star Weekend. Reggie Miller will reportedly be the lead NBA analyst for NBC starting next season. College basketball, number one Auburn over LSU, 87-74, number 4 Alabama over Mississippi State, 88-84, number 6 Houston beat West Virginia, 63-49. In football, the Jets reportedly hire Steve Wilks as their new defensive coordinator. College football, Chris Ash, to reportedly be the new defensive coordinator at Notre Dame. NHL in overtime, Penguins over Utah, 3-2. Sidney Crosby, the game-winning goal in overtime. I'm Peter Schwartz.
The Infinity Sports Network is on your smart speaker. All you have to say is, play Infinity Sports Network. That's it. Play Infinity Sports Network.
On New Year's Eve and then on into New Year's Day when we had the terror attack in New Orleans that we were talking on the air about the NFL and its efforts to not only heighten security, but really to double and triple check all of their different protocols. And now in advance of the Super Bowl landing in New Orleans, that's exactly what we're hearing from the NFL. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. You can find me online at A-Law Radio and also on our Facebook page. The NFL security chief, her name is Kathy Lanier, and she is saying that they are, in fact, working not only to double and triple check all their protocols, they're working with local and federal law enforcement in New Orleans, but they also have heightened security measures around the game. One time, I went to the Super Bowl, meaning I attended the game. I've been to Super Bowl week, but and those security measures are a lot as it is. You have to go through multiple different security checkpoints. You have to pick up your credentials with all kinds of ID. You have to have your bags checked. There are dogs, presumably bomb sniffing dogs and substance sniffing dogs all around. It's a very tight security just on Radio Row to get into the convention center or the conference center where the NFL is hosting these activities. And then every single kind of room or checkpoint you go through, you have to have your credential, and sometimes you even have to have ID with you. That's just for Radio Row. I went to the game once, and I went through no fewer than 5 metal detectors, 5 security checkpoints to get to the point at which I was within 100 yards of, this was NRG Stadium. And I've been to other NFL games in which you also have to go through security like that. So yes, the NFL is working diligently with people on the ground in New Orleans, of course, because this is a routine. Well, it's an event that routinely draws at least 100,000 extra people. And we're not just talking about the fans. Oh, my gosh, Pete. To get into the game, it can cost you about $9,000 as a ticket. But also hotel rooms in New Orleans right now, $1,800 a night on average.
Grab that right out of my pocket.
Oh, my gosh. So we're not just talking about people who will attend the game at the Superdome, but also vendors and Hall of Famers and members of the NFL community, and then hundreds of different radio and TV outlets and all of the support staff that go along with getting those operations on the air. Plus, you have the NFL fan experience. I mean, there's so much happening. There are plenty of players that are in town for not just their own events, but also parties over the weekend, or you've got the NFL honors that take place. I mean, there's so much that happens that it's really an influx of activity the entire week. And of course, they're concerned. There were some safety measures that were not in place when this driver, this terrorist, veered his pickup truck into a crowded area of Bourbon Street on New Year's Eve, and 14 people died in that attack. And now here we are 5 weeks later, and they're getting ready to have this mass influx of people. So just know that the NFL is on it, and they're doubling and tripling all of their different checks and protocols. Let's talk to Matt, who's in Florida. Welcome to After Hours.
Hey, good morning.
Morning.
So I just heard a rumor yesterday that here in Jacksonville, down here in Jacksonville, everybody's all up in arms that we missed out on Ben Johnson because of Trent Baalke. Mm. Well, then they fire Baalke and we go get, you know, Cohen guy.
Yep.
And we're kind of excited about that around here right now.
Okay.
And we're even more excited that we missed Ben Johnson because rumor has it he just hired Press Taylor as his passing game coordinator.
Okay.
Which is absolutely mind-blowing because Press Taylor is you're a Jacksonville or a Philadelphia fan in any way, shape, or form, you will learn that he is the worst offensive coordinator you could ever have on the planet. More bubble screens after bubble screens after bubble screens.
Ever.
And 2 yard outs.
Okay.
Yeah, he's the worst coordinator on the
You're team. Sure it's not so about it's the guys that he has on the roster?
No, I mean, they're NFL players. I mean, all these guys would kill somebody in a quiet room with nobody watching on TV. They're all amazing athletes. Scheming up things is how you do it. And Press Taylor got Doug fired in Philly, and he got Doug fired in Jacksonville.
Whew, quite a statement.
He's about to get Ben fired in Chicago. I'll call you back in about 2 years when that happens.
All right.
So anyway, just thought I'd get the 2 cents on that. But Ben Johnson, he might not be the genius they thought he was with Press Taylor. So.
All right.
Anyway, you have a good one.
Thank you, Matt, in Florida. Well, at least he's not making him the offensive coordinator. I think Ben Johnson is the offensive mastermind there when it comes to Caleb Williams. And I think anybody else who works with him is going to have to line up with what Ben wants to do because he's the creator, the innovator. But Press Taylor is getting hired as the passing game coordinator for the Bears on Ben Johnson's
Who's
staff.
Who's that, Liam Collins' brother?
Right. Kevin in South Carolina, welcome to After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
Good morning, Amy. How are you?
Good. You got about 90 seconds.
So I just have a random NFL question.
Mm-hmm.
I know it's probably happened before. What happens if a NFL playoff game goes into overtime,
mm-hmm.
but it is still tied at the end of overtime?
Well, they do sudden death. They have different rules for playoff games. They don't obviously end it after 10 minutes. There are no ties, is what you're saying. There can't be ties. Right.
Right. I was just wondering how they, like, you get 10 minutes, nobody scores, the score is still the same. What do they do after that?
During the postseason, the rules are not the same, right? Okay, so the playoff overtime rule, the overtime period's 15 minutes long during the postseason, and both teams have to possess the ball at least once. Okay, so they do have that stipulation so that it's, and this is a relatively new change, so that it's not, hey, the team that wins the coin flip ends up having the only chance to possess the ball. So it is a little bit different, but yeah, it's 15 minutes long during the postseason.
Got you. That was my only question. Thank you, man.
Right.
Long time listener, first time caller.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Have a great day, Kevin, in South Carolina. There's the one exception. Again, this is like nuanced and new rules. One exception, if the team that kicked the ball away to begin OT scores a safety on the opponent's first possession, the game ends immediately with a win for the team that kicked off. That's odd. But that's the one stipulation. So, yeah, 15 minutes. Teams have to each possess the ball, but then there's a safety caveat to it.